Comments made on ZeroTalk Tech Chats are those of the individuals and do not represent ZeroTech Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers. Welcome to the latest ZeroTalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of ZeroTech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. And now, here's your host, Michael Loft. Welcome to ZeroTalk Tech Chat 85 for January 13, 2010. This is Michael Loft. Tonight's topic, exercise for better health and a better quality of life. We have two guests with us this evening. First, we have Joshua Loya, who's a martial arts instructor out in San Diego, California. Thanks for joining us tonight, Joshua.
Glad to be here.
Yes, and you are with the Guardian Academy of Martial Arts, located out in San Diego. We're going to talk a lot about what you do out there. Also joining us this evening is Hope Paulos, who has taken on the art and fun of running in local marathons.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, hello. Thanks for joining us this evening. And Hope, also totally blind, as Joshua and I am, so it'll be interesting to find out how each of you do the things that you do and what tricks and tools you've learned to master your craft. So, Joshua, I want to start with you, sir.
Sure.
First of all, what types of martial arts do you teach at this academy in San Diego?
Sure. The main art we teach is an art called Guardian Kempo. There are a few different Kempo styles, generally characterized by combining both grappling skills, which is like ground fighting, throws, that kind of thing, skills more common to karate, such as kicking and punching, and then we also do weapons training as well. And if somebody wants to focus on one of those particular aspects and they don't want to train in the full synthesis of all three of those, they can focus on just our Guardian Jiu-Jitsu class, which is just the grappling and the ground fighting, Guardian Karate, which is just the stand-up fighting, or our Guardian Kobo Jitsu class, which focuses specifically on weapons like swords and staves and that kind of thing.
So what got you into martial arts?
Well, I haven't always been blind, and I used to love to watch old, Bruce Lee movies, and, I'm 30, so, the Ninja Turtles those were very popular when I was a kid, and just kind of always wanted to, but because I was always having to be very careful about losing my eyesight, because I had retinal problems and all sorts of things, that was not something that was available to me. And eventually came across the instructor that I've been training with now for several years. And he was very willing to give it a shot, and just kept going from there.
Yes, that's interesting. How did you convince the school to take a chance on you? I guess it really came from training there and them seeing that you were able to master all the skills that they...
Yeah, I mean, I'm only a first-degree black belt and by no means a master, but in terms of the basics there, yeah, I mean, they saw what type of student I was and saw that we have a philosophy of giving people the opportunity to exercise leadership in whatever capacity they're capable of. And so even before I obtained my black belt, I would still be asked to demonstrate techniques or maybe handle class for 10 minutes at a time or something, and was able to be evaluated on that scale before given more leadership responsibilities at the school.
So how do you, being totally blind, how do you ensure that your students are executing the moves correctly?
There are some things that I do need sighted assistance for. It's not exactly the safest thing for me to, if a student is demonstrating a form or a kata, which is a series of moves, say, for instance, with a sword out in the middle of the floor by themselves, not good for me to stand up close when they're swinging a sword around. So I would get sighted assistance from one of the other instructors on that. However, if I wanted to evaluate their grappling skills or in a sparring match where we're doing some stand-up fighting, I can tell a lot based on their body position, sound. There's a lot of, as you begin to train, you start noticing body position of the other person you're training with. And that's where my other senses really come into play.
Yeah, a lot of audio cues there. And of course, folks, we're going to cover a lot of other stuff. So if you're not particularly interested in the martial arts aspect, we're going to talk about a lot of things, including diet and building yourself up for exercise and making sure you have enough water and yoga and all kinds of cool stuff. So don't worry. I think we'll have something for everyone. That's my hope. Speaking of hope, why don't you tell us a little bit about kind of your motivation to get into running marathons, what your goal was, what you were raising money for, and kind of how you had to train yourself and get up to speed in doing that.
Sure. My dad and my aunt in California were very interested in running, and I was never really interested in sports when I was younger. I was totally blind since birth, and I really didn't know how to run. Nobody had really taught me the correct form. So 2 years ago, actually 3 years ago now, I began training for 13.1 miles, a half marathon, and we raised money for breast cancer. We ran the 26.2 with Donna. They had both a half and a full. And we ran the first year of that.
Using a personal trainer?
As far as training, when I first started training, I could only run about 10 steps. And I was all out of breath and wasn't in good shape. So it took me about a year to train. And with some help from my dad, who also ran the marathon. My aunt and dad and I all ran it together. With his help and the help of a wonderful book that he actually had to read to me called Marathoning for Mortals by John... I cannot remember his last name. That's not good. But it should be in RFBND. I requested it this year. So hopefully they'll put it out for those RFBND members. As far as now, I'm currently training for a full marathon, 26.2, and I should be running that in October.
So I want to talk to you about how you approach that, because we, you know, when I went to school for visually impaired, we, you know, did mile, like tandem running, you know, mile around a fixed track. So I'm curious how that works in an open where you're running through a community.
Usually to get started, I run on the treadmill. I have a treadmill and I use a stopwatch, at least back then. And now I use my trusty iPod, iTouch. But as far as running to the community, there are two different ways you can do it. You can do it through a tether where a sighted person has a tether on their wrist or on their belt loop, and you have the tether, again, on your wrist or on your belt loop, however you want. It's about maybe 3 feet, 2.5 to 3 feet, depending on how close you want to run with the sighted person. Or you can run like you're going sighted guide, and that's the way that I prefer to do it. Yeah, we tried it, and my mother was watching from the edge of the track and said that we looked like pinballs going back and forth.
What were you going to say, Joshua? You had a thought about that.
No, I was just I was seconding your response to the tether. That just sounds particularly frightening to me, not having enough information to really know what's going on, feeling like there's a lot more room for injury in that instance.
Now, maybe on a track or something, that might be nice to have both your arms free. But yeah, I'm traveling in a community, I just can't see that. So Joshua, you gave me some links here for yoga. So I want to talk about yoga. I think this is something that a lot of blind folks could do. And kind of let's talk about what it involves, because it's both a physical and kind of a mental exercise as well, right?
Yeah. you know, I only have a limited amount of yoga experience, but there's a lot of overlap with martial arts training. But I would say one of the biggest things that people neglect when it comes to fitness and health is breath. You know, the fact that, you know, your body is not going to process fat. You're not going to burn fat unless you're breathing properly. You're also not going to have particularly, you know, a whole lot of energy with that. And so, you know, even if you're not wanting to, you know, twist your body into a pretzel, you can start out slow and you learn how to breathe in such a way to maximize the amount of energy that you can get from your breath and to focus your mind and relieve the stress that, you know, from life. And yoga is particularly good with that. And it can be a good, great foundation for someone who's not particularly physically active. They don't want to start swimming or lifting weights or running, but they can do yoga because that doesn't require a lot of effort to start. And the great thing about yoga is that you can do it regardless of your fitness level.
So do you think that's something a blind person could pick up just from verbal instruction, or you really need one-on-one just to get down the moves and the motion, breathing?
I would say it depends largely on, you know, how people process information. You know, some people learn better, and even sighted people, some of them learn visually, but a lot of them learn better through audio description, and some of them learn much better through doing. So it depends a lot on the individual learning style of the particular person. I would say community college yoga class is probably a great way to start. And then there is an audio course that's sold on that website and that link that I gave you. And I think actually that AFB article you mentioned later down in the show notes also mentions that same course. And that has some pretty excellent, you know, audio descriptions of the various postures and what's necessary for yoga training. And it's a good starting point, I would say.
And what we have on the screen is a blind yoga website. So there are a number of people practicing it. So you're not going to be like cutting edge. There certainly looks like there's an email list here, so you can speak with other people doing it and help get yourself up to speed and realize you're not alone as you try to decide how and what impact it's going to have in your life. Is this something you practice, either of you, or?
I've done some. You know, I've taken several yoga classes and still actually incorporate some yoga postures and both in my flexibility and strengthening routine. I haven't done it for as significantly as I've done martial arts, but I do incorporate aspects of yoga training into my general fitness.
Now, you gave me a link of Blind Zen Martial Arts for the Blind. Let's talk about what we can find on this website.
A couple things there. There's a this book I actually just recently ordered. I haven't actually read through it. But there's the gentleman who started the site. He's a martial arts instructor, and he's sighted, and he had never really considered martial arts as being a viable option for someone who's blind. And he had a woman call him while he was teaching a self-defense class and asked him if he'd be willing to teach her. And he kind of gave it a shot and ended up writing down a lot of his experiences that he kind of learned, ways in which to teach somebody who's blind, that he had kind of learned along the way because he hadn't had any experience of it. And it can be a good starting point, especially if somebody doesn't think that martial arts is possible for them. There are also links to a number of news stories about other blind martial artists beyond this man's first student. And so I'm certainly not the only one who's had experience doing this, but it's something so foreign to what we think is possible. And sometimes it's helpful just to know that somebody else has gone before you, and that could be enough momentum to give it a shot for yourself.
That's a good point. If someone goes into a local gym or something, just trying to find a personal trainer, and that trainer not really believing that the blind person is capable, or, you know, dumbing it down, or... Mm-hmm. What should we look for in a personal trainer to make sure that we're getting someone who is giving us the most from the experience?
I would say the biggest thing, and this is relevant whether or not you're interested in martial arts or not, I think the biggest thing is even if they don't have a lot of experience, although certainly experience can be a huge plus, I think willingness to try something different, the key thing is, do they respect you as a person, or do they just look at you as a way to make a quick buck? And that's something to be aware of, whether you're disabled or not. You know, are they interested in actually helping you reach your fitness goal? And sometimes, you know, different people are going to have various challenges. And so if they're willing to work with you and try to figure out what works best for you, that's, I would say, actually more important than whether or not they've had any experience working with a blind client or student.
That's a good point, because a lot of these gyms and you know, are just interested in getting someone to sign up for 6 months or a year and pay so much per month or per week. And, you know, if you don't show, that's not really their concern. They're just interested in getting you onto a contract. So that's a good point to make sure that, you know, you're really going in and getting the training that you've paid for. And we're going to play an interview shortly with Scott Rakowski, who couldn't join us, but talked about his finding and going to a local gym in Penrith, Australia, and then combining that with working out at home on a treadmill. Let's talk a little bit about home devices. What, you know, if we want to go out and choose a treadmill, Hope, I believe you said you have one, right?
Yeah, we got one that had, you know, I don't know the brand, but I can get back to you on that. We just got one from like a local sports store, and we put like the braille on the mileage, like 3 for 3 miles, 4 for 4 miles, and then up and down for like the incline. And this treadmill is good because it has programs that you can go through to help you work your way up to running or becoming more in shape, but I don't have anything really fancy.
Okay, well, and maybe that's less is more, because certainly some of these units are menu driven and may not be accessible. So there's also a factor of actually going and trying them out and seeing, you know, what's out there. So yeah, if you could let us know the model number of that, and we'll mm-hmm. post it on the show notes. At least we can find a few units that folks can get some use out of. Joshua, what kind of tools do you have inside your home?
Sure. Right now I live in an apartment, so I don't have quite as much room as I used to. I have used a Bowflex, and those are that's certainly usable by a blind person. You can adjust the weight independently because there's tactile things on that. So if you want a kind of a home gym aspect there, you can use that. Right now I actually only have an Iron Gym pull-up bar, but you know, it's like a $30 thing. You can buy it at, you know, Walmart or pretty much anywhere. And you know, I can do various grips with it. I can use it for leg lifts. And even if I can't get out because it's raining real hard, I can at least get into some additional strengthening exercises there. Beyond that, mainly just do additional calisthenics at home for that.
So let's talk about choosing a fitness plan that's going to work for you and then sticking with it. A lot of people start out, like you said, the first week they're gung-ho, they want to do this, that, and everything else, and then all of a sudden, you know, they find other things they'd rather be doing, or it's early in the morning. So let's talk about coming up with a plan that's going to work for you and then keeping yourself motivated to stick with it. And I guess a lot of that has to do with goals, but just talk about, you know, warming yourself up to that. Someone like myself who really hasn't done much in the last couple of years. I guess I need to start a little slower to get up to speed, but, you know, then come up with something that I can live with and then build on it and increase speed or length of exercise and so forth.
Yeah, I would say that, you know, even if something as simple as going for a walk 3 to 5 times a week, you know, I know that you, especially for people who aren't real savvy with their cane skills, that can be already a bit of a detraction there, but, you know, going out for a mile or two walk, you know, a few times a week, you know, it doesn't seem like much, but it's the consistency of the exercise that, you know, you do that regularly, you're going to start noticing results after a while. And again, it's not so much how much you do, but how much you can do consistently. So, you know, especially at the beginning of the year, a lot of people, they want to go out and they want to lift weights, do all this stuff, and they work out like crazy for that first week, and then their body's sore, and it's so much that they don't get back to it. So, again, less is more in some respects. It needs to be something sustainable. And then it's same thing with diet and that sort of thing too.
Well, I want to talk about diet because I know there's two forms. So Scott will mention here shortly how they started on an initial plan, you know, with the special shakes and everything, and to get some immediate weight loss and to get the metabolism up, and then switching over to a diet that you can live with, because, you know, if you just go on something for weight loss that you don't enjoy at all, eventually someday you're going to break it and go back to your old ways. So let's talk about that, getting into a diet that you can live with.
Yeah. I would say the biggest thing for me, actually just talking about diet, since we're kind of on the subject there, is being aware of what I was putting in my body. You know, just the idea that, you know, a 12-ounce can of soda, you know, has like 220 calories. And that's just one can of soda. And that's almost the calorie count that you're looking for a meal. you know, you're looking between, if you're having a big meal, you know, closer to 600 or more, but usually around 300 something calories for the average person's meal portion, calorie count. And just that being aware that that extra soda that you're having is, you know, that's packing in additional calories that you're going to have to burn off that may also not be particularly nutrient rich. And as I was beginning to become aware of what I was putting in my body, I began to adjust pretty drastically what types of things I was eating and drinking.
So what are some things now that you would never touch, or maybe some things that you've added to your diet? What are some changes that you made when you really decided to make a serious commitment to living a more healthy life?
There are very few things that I don't ever touch, but I have them very infrequently, you know, obviously. But I don't drink soda particularly very often anymore. I personally tend towards skim milk or non-fat milk when, you know, it comes to cereal and that sort of thing. I will eat chips or candy on occasion, but that's more of a, you know, kind of infrequent thing. But I'm not the, when I want a snack, I don't grab a big old giant bag of potato chips and plop down in front of the couch and you know, watch a movie. I kind of think about ahead of time what it is that I want to eat so that it's not just this mindless eating. You know, if I want a snack, maybe I'll have a piece of fruit, or I'll have a, you know, a protein shake or a granola bar or something that is a bit more reasonable, rather than just something I can just keep eating and keep eating, like a, you know, like a, like I said, a big bag of potato chips.
Right, you'll just keep going because you're not getting, you know, you're not getting the nutrients that your body is craving, so you just keep feeding more and more and more until you're physically full but have no nourishment in
right.
that.
You know? And also too, when you're, you know, one of the things for, you know, if you're watching a movie or listening to an audiobook or something, it's very easy to not, to kind of do unconscious eating where you're getting so into the action that you're shoveling that popcorn in your mouth. And before you realize, you're like, wait a minute, where did my popcorn go?
And right. It's out of habit. You're just,
yeah.
So that would say, that's interesting. Good point. And we've all done that.
One thing that I found hard in the beginning, like when I was first training for the half marathon, was determining how many calories was in a certain food. Now I am on a diet and I have 1,200 calories a day because I need to lose some weight. And so I use an application, which I believe we'll talk about later, on my iPod that gives me all of the calories, and it tells me that if I'm on my weight loss goal, which is really nice. It gives me the nutrients as well.
Well, let's talk about that. It's a great segue into certainly, you know, we have the site that was created over by Horizons for the Blind, where you can go and look up specific foods and find out the contents of them, calories and fat grams and all these things.
Fantastic resource.
Yes, it's a great resource. Why am I having a mental block on what it is? But
Directions for me.
Yeah, directionsforme.org. Yes, exactly. So that's a great resource just to find out how to cook food. So maybe you want to eat healthier things like rice or whatever, but you don't know how to make it. I mean, just like you said, is sodas and other things, the chips we consume, we think, well, we assume it's not bad. You know, it says it's diet or, you know, but we can actually find out for ourselves. But let's talk about some iPhone apps, and we'll start with you, Hope, that you're using to make it. We got a few here. I don't think a couple you mentioned I don't have the links to here, but so we have something called MD Workout. That's one you did mention. I did go download it. And it is free, I think, until the 15th. So if you want that app, you better go grab it, folks.
Actually, I don't have that one.
Okay, that's one you don't have. I'm getting – that was Joe. I'm sorry. Joe Steinkamp said that he played around with that. So we'll talk about which apps you're using and what you get from them.
Sure. The first one, keeping to the diet discussion, is MyFitnessPal. And that app is – absolutely wonderful. It gives you a diary. You can search for a food, any food, including restaurants, and it will give you the calorie, the serving size, and it will allow you to add it to your diary. You can also add exercises to your diary, and it will tell you if you are, after you've completed the day, your exercises and your calorie count. It will tell you whether or not you're completing your goal that you want to lose. You have to set up a goal. You know, I want to lose 20 pounds in, 2 months. It's just a...
Write a figure.
Just
to get started,
So then you set up your weight, and then you start counting your calories. And it's just so nice to be able to say, okay, I've had, popcorn, and you put that in your diary, and you don't have to worry about it. It will tell you how many calories you've eaten during the day. And
now, that assumes you've been honest, right? You have to tell it the amount of popcorn.
You have to be honest.
Did it have butter or Parmesan cheese or salt? What did it have on that popcorn?
So. Yeah, you have to be honest.
You're only fooling yourself.
That extra piece of two or three pieces of cheese you ate before you put a piece of slice of cheese on your sandwich.
A couple of candy bars,
Yeah, those little details do matter, and they all add up. Another one I wanted to mention, you mentioned was it Nike Plus?
Yes, that comes with your iPod Touch. I don't know if it comes with the iPhone.
But you can get it, right? You can get it.
Yeah, I've seen it available. I don't know. I haven't used it myself yet.
Now, some have complained it's not accurate, but you would disagree. You said you found it to be very relevant.
You can calibrate it. So if, say, I walked 2 miles an hour, if I'm on a treadmill, I walk 2 miles an hour for 30 minutes, which means I've gone a mile. With your sensor, you have to purchase an extra sensor, which is $20, something like that. And that goes in your shoe or in a pouch that you can purchase. And if you calibrate it right, it's certainly very accurate, extremely accurate.
Did you say you used iTreadmill? Is that one that you meant? No, okay.
Nope.
My FitnessPal was the only one I ever that you had mentioned.
Okay, so. I use Runmate.
Okay, Runmate.
This is extremely good for those of you who are interested in running but haven't ran before.
And what does it do?
This is a program that has several different running programs on it. The one that I would recommend is Nike Walk to Run for the very beginner. And that basically gives you a, for example, it gives you a walk for 4 minutes and jog for a minute, or walk for a minute and jog 30 seconds, and do this 8 times. And it basically will coach you. It's like a coach, a virtual coach.
Oh, very cool. So there's a lot of them. There's a number of them over at applevis.com. There's something called Pocket Yoga.
Oh, wow.
There's something that the NFB reported on that they saw at CES, the Concept 2 app allows you to track your rowing performance. So let me bring up the AFB Access World here on fitness. And, of course, this is a good FAQs or frequently asked questions. So this is a good resource. And, Joshua, you'd mentioned this earlier, so I think you'd read this at one point.
Yeah, I was taking a look at that. And I think further down in that article they actually mentioned that the audio CD set that the Blind Yoga website is selling. So they don't. I don't know if they quite endorsed it, but they certainly recommend it as a good resource.
Well, good deal. Let's see. I want to make sure we come on a full hour, and I'm going to go ahead and play this interview with Scott Rakowski that will take us up to the top of the hour. And if you guys can stay for an extra 10-15 minutes, since we did start late, I'd appreciate it. And we'll take some questions from folks. That would be great if you can. Great. So I will play this, and unfortunately I can't feed it to you, but we'll play this and we'll be back to join you in about 13 minutes. Now speaking with Scott Rakowski, who resides just outside of Sydney, Australia, and Scott's going to tell us about his choice of using a personal trainer. So, hey, Scotty, you go to the gym, what, 3 times a week, something like that? And you have a trainer there,
okay,
right?
Okay, 2 times a week to the gym, yeah.
Okay, so talk about this, A, your decision to do that, and then kind of the procedure of finding a good trainer.
Well, basically, back in 2008, in February, I decided that I needed to lose weight. And I thought, it's not working on my own here at home with the treadmill and that sort of thing. So I decided, well, I've had enough. And I need to do something about it now, otherwise it'll be too late. So I looked in the White Pages, looked at a few different gyms because I wanted a personal trainer. I didn't want just to go to an average public gym where you wouldn't get any support or assistance, because in the public gym, it's just like the odd trainer here and there. They may offer you one or two sessions, which is no good to me. I wanted something that was ongoing. So the weekend I decided to go to the gym, I actually saw in the newspaper there was an ad for the gym which I now go to, Penrith Personal Training Studio. So I called them up and I told them what I was after and that I wanted to have a personal trainer. And they said, come and see us and we'll tell you how much it costs. And this is the initial interview, which I went to and I liked what I heard. And it's expensive. It's not cheap. It's in Australian dollars, it's around $50 a session. So you get two sessions a week. So it's $100 a week. Every gym varies in price. You pay more, obviously, for a personal trainer than you would just for a membership at a gym. But I thought, well, you know, I'll try it for a few months, see how it goes. And I'm very impressed with what I've been going to the gym since 2008. And I'm still going there to this day. And I've lost a bit over 20 kilos. So I was 264 pounds and now I'm down to about 210.
Do you have contracts like you do here in the States where maybe you have to commit to 6 months or a year at a time, or you just kind of go until you no longer wish to have the trainer?
With that particular gym, there's no actual contract as such. He just said you have to just come twice a week because once wouldn't do any good, really. Other gyms do have contracts that like 6 months or a year, whatever. I don't know what they are because I didn't go to a public gym. But also with this personal trainer at the time, I was actually buying drinks from the gym. Like, they're like those little cartons with a straw on the front. That's like a protein shake. So the idea was he gave me an eating plan. He said basically you don't eat fruit after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. You have like some cereal and toast or cereal and fruit for breakfast. You have a mid snack a couple of hours later, like a piece of fruit, either some water or a protein shake or something. But it was very, very rigorous at first, meaning that at night you have to have green veggies. And the idea was to keep your metabolism going and have the 6 little mini meals a day. By keeping your metabolism moving, you would eventually lose the weight. Otherwise, if you just have like 3 meals a day, your body still thinks you're not going to get any food, so it stores it all as fat. You wanted to try and break that cycle. Did work, losing weight here, and I'm hoping to lose another 10 more kilos in the next, I don't know how long it'll take, but the longer it takes, the better, because you won't put it all back on straight away, so that's a good thing.
Okay, so let's talk specifically about the training, how long each session is, and kind of what types of exercises you perform.
Well, the training is an hour at a time. You don't go more than an hour, because you just wouldn't sustain the ability there. But basically, you do a warm-up when you first start, either some push-ups on the ground or a bit of running on the spot. The trainer mixes it up all the time, so it's not the same thing every time you go. And basically, you do that. You usually do legs, back, and shoulders, just different groups. And you do some weightlifting as well. You can also do some pull downs where you reach up and pull the bar down with some weight on it. There's also, at the end of the session, say 15 minutes from the end, you do the cardio part of it, and that's usually the exercise bike, the treadmill, the rowing machine, or this vibrating platform that sort of shakes you around. I'm not exactly certain how it works, but interesting experience for those who haven't tried that sort of thing. But very enjoyable. The time goes by very quickly. And as long as you've got a trainer who's willing to help you and you tell them up front that you are blind and you do need assistance so they can show you how to do the exercises properly so you don't hurt a muscle or tear a bit of a thigh tear like I did, you should be fine.
Now, have you had the same trainer since 08 or has they switched?
I've had a couple of different ones. The one that I did have when I started, he's busier with other things now. So I've switched to another one in the same gym, and I switch between the two of them. When one can't make it, the other one fills in, and they're both quite good. They're good people. I liked the first trainer I had, who's much, I think he's a better trainer, but For the most part, the atmosphere of going to the gym and having a one-on-one trainer and not having heaps of loud music in the background so you can't hear what's going on, etc., it's a good thing. Yeah, you could do it all at home too, but it's not the same. Yeah, you pay a bit less, but having all the variety of equipment in the gym to use that you would normally not have at home, I like the challenge of the workout, and I also enjoy the fact that the trainer helps you and he gives you encouragement to continue. And it's just an experience that I'm very happy with, and I wouldn't trade it for anything, really.
Okay, so let's talk about, I guess you had to have a conversation with, correct, one of your trainers who kind of ran you into devices there, and that was a little uncomfortable, and you had to kind of talk through that and work that out. Explain that.
Yeah, what happened was I was walking with the trainer between some pieces of equipment there, and he actually ran me into, I think it was like the end of a bar on a weight bench or something like that. And at the time, I didn't realize anything was wrong because everything was fine. But then when I finished in the gym, I noticed that my knee was kind of sore and there was a bit of blood on the top of my knee and the skin was just slightly broken. And then when I came back to the gym, I asked the trainer, "Oh, can you see on my knee here what she caused to happen?" And he tried to deny it, and I said, no, I said, I wouldn't run into this on purpose, and, I trust your judgment, and, I said to him that if this sort of thing continued, that I'd have to look for another place to train, so he's been much more careful since then, and I think he must have thought that I was serious because I couldn't go for a couple of sessions because the knee was a bit bruised and it was just sort of walk. And when I came back, he actually saw that it was scabbing over and saw that it was a little bit bruised. So I think he felt bad. So he should. He should just know better and not try and blame me for walking into the equipment when it was clearly his fault.
Indeed. So now you do some stuff at home, right? You have a treadmill at home. So maybe some people listening to this want to use something just at home. What kind of device do you have and how do you use it and how long do you use it?
Yeah, I've got a treadmill at home. I've had it for about, I think I had it since 2005 or something. I've forgotten exactly when I got it. This is my second treadmill. The first one wore out. They're not cheap. Over here, you'd pay around about $1,200 for a decent electric treadmill. Yeah, you could go and get a manual one for $300 or $400, but the manual ones, you just can't maintain the same speed as you can on the electric one where you set the speed and just keep walking. And my one, unfortunately, is not like the one in the gym that's slightly wider. It has the suspended mat that you walk on, and it feels like you're actually bouncing slightly up and down when you run. I don't run on mine. I prefer just to walk quickly at about 4 miles an hour, I think it is. And at home, I usually go for about an hour. And in that time, I've walked about 3.11 miles. And with the new iPhone app, which I've just started to use called RunKeeper, it actually tells you how far you've walked and your distance walked, average speed, how many calories you've burnt, and then you can publish the results on Facebook, Twitter, and also on the RunKeeper.com website. And it's quite a good application. It's actually helpful to have the playlist playing in your headphones, and you can have it every 5 minutes telling you how good you're going, or you can have it telling you, in my case, when you've reached a kilometer. So it's very cool.
Okay, so what do you do to amuse yourself during that? Do you play music or read a book or do anything that kind of distract you from not even thinking about the fact that you're exercising or walking?
Yeah, I have got the Sennheiser wireless headphones, and I put those on and put on some iTunes, a playlist, or I use the Bluetooth headphones with my iPhone so I can take calls if I need to on the treadmill while I'm there. And just having the music in the background or listen to an episode of a TV show, which is probably not what you'd want to listen to when you're exercising, but if you feel like it, you can. But yeah, if you listen to some dance music or the 80s that I grew up with, I like the 80s music on .977music.com, or I listen to Samnet as well.
Have you made any changes in your diet? Any things that you no longer eat or drink that you used to?
Basically, I used to eat a fair bit of, I wouldn't say heaps of candy. I used to drink heaps and heaps of beer. As in heaps, I mean about maybe six a week or something, I think it was. But now I drink one or two light beers a week, maybe one most of the time. And I used to eat little snacks all the time as well, and just it wasn't the right way to go. So now I just do the six little meals a day, have the cereal at breakfast time, and I don't eat the fruit after 3 o'clock in the afternoon. And I have changed the diet for the better, and I feel better for it. I don't feel as bloated as I did when I was just eating all the snacks. And when you feel like you actually are losing weight, it encourages you to go on and continue to do the exercise and the gym and the treadmill or whatever you want to do at home. And I think it's a good thing that everybody should look at something like that. And even if you can't afford to go to a gym, yeah, you can just walk up and down the street a few times, or at your house or whatever you'd like to do, or walk up and down some stairs. That gets you tired pretty quick. If you've got a few stairs, you can go up and down. But yeah, I like the gym. It's a good thing to do. And I think that people seriously should look at the weight issue if that's a concern to them, because you don't want to die of a heart attack or anything like that. So, yeah, you want to try and live as long as you can, basically.
Are you aware of any other health-related iPhone apps that people might find useful?
There are a few. I've looked at another one. It's a free one called Pedometer. It tells you how far you've walked. Haven't tried it myself, but it's in the store there. There'll be other ones that I'm not aware of in the US store compared to the Australian iTunes store. But plenty of apps out there. There's a fitness and health section in the store, so you may want to peruse that section and just see what sort of applications you can find. But there's a whole heap of them. There's some that tell you your BMI, body mass index. There's some that tell you, doesn't tell you your weight as such, but it can sort of guess it. I don't quite know how that works, but there's a whole host of them out there. It's just a matter of trying to find ones that are accessible and ones that work for you.
And I believe there's a category of health apps, accessible apps, over at applevis.com, so folks can check that out as well. Any final thoughts? Anything you want to leave our listeners with?
Yeah, just to keep on, keep fit, keep exercising. At times it will become a chore and you'll feel like, I don't feel like doing this today. But as I keep reminding myself, getting larger and larger, and the doctor saying that you'll either die early or lose weight and live a prosperous life, I chose that option because of the fact that, you know, I enjoy life. I want to live life as much as I can. And I don't want diabetes or heart attack or stroke or any of those sorts of things. So if people are serious about it, they'll give it their best, and I hope it works out for everybody, and it's a good thing to do.
Very good point. A lot of diabetes can be reversed simply by losing weight. Thank you, Scotty, for taking a few minutes and joining us today. And you're listening to Serotalk Tech Chat 85.
Hi.
And we are speaking with Joshua Loya tonight and Hope Hollows. And Scott made some very good points there, also using the Runkeeper that Hope is using, and how getting in shape can reverse what a lot of blind folks live with, and that's diabetes, and a lot of it is due to diet and some poor choices in what we put in our bodies. So opening up now for questions, and so if there's something you'd like to ask Joshua or Hope, well, I don't know what you could ask me that I would know, but anyway, I think this is really cool that, again, it's another great use for the iPhone and the Touch and iPad. Now, Josh, you have a Mac, right? Have you found?
Yeah, I've actually just got into the Mac space at the end of October, but I've had my iPhone 3GS since about October of 2009. So I am a very big fan of Apple products, and while certainly they're not the only company that is making strides towards making mainstream products accessible, they seem to be one of the most significant players in that space. So I'm very grateful for what Apple's done on that front.
Now, are they are those helping you in any way in your exercise and fitness goals?
You know, I really haven't actually used them to tell you that much, but I did download the iFitness Pal that Hope mentioned and was looking at it, and I think I'm going to be making some significant use of it because, you know, I'm in pretty decent shape, but, you know, I can always improve the level of fitness and physique that I have currently. One thing I did want to mention, though, if it's all right.
Please, go ahead.
I think that one of the additional benefits that is really underrated when it comes to exercise is the mood elevation component that it has. You know, a lot of blind people and people in general, but I would say those of us with especially those of us who may have recently lost our eyesight, you know, are there might be a tendency towards depression, towards, you know, a feeling of powerlessness, of not being able to do stuff that we used to be able to do, and, you know, that starts to really, you know, that can cycle around in our head. And there's a huge impact that interplay between our physiology and our emotions. You know, our emotions can make us feel worse. I mean, we can make ourselves sick by allowing ourselves to think, in sort of a negative way. But we can also, things can go back the other way, where depending on how we're breathing, our posture, the level of oxygen and blood flow we're getting through the rest of our body, that can have a dramatic impact on our mood. And so, if a blind person or anyone really for that matter is struggling with any kind of depression, getting regular exercise can be one of the most dramatic ways that situation can be improved.
And improving the quality of sleep. Now, when I worked and I walked about 3/4 of a mile each way for the bus stop, I noticed that walk up the hill to my home, you know, 5 in the afternoon, really helped me to rest better at night.
Yeah, very much so.
So, again, the whole pattern and routine of it and the physical exertion. And I really did feel better, I have to say. And so it's something that I hope I do follow through on. I plan to follow through on and hope others listening to this will as well. Again, if you have questions, please submit them, text questions. We'd certainly like to hear what's on your mind this evening. What about, you mentioned soft drinks. So a lot of people might use that for their caffeine kick. So we know a lot of people say that sugar and salt are the two white poisons. So those are, you know, two of the things we really need to get rid of from our body. But what can we replace that with? I mean, are teas okay? Or some people go with the green teas? Or what do you recommend for?
Yeah, I'd say that, one of the things, you know, one of my vices, I would say, would still be coffee. I do like coffee. But one of the things you need to be aware of with any kind of caffeine intake is that caffeine is a diuretic, and meaning that, you know, it'll just activate your digestive system. So you tend to get more dehydrated the more caffeine you drink. And so if you are going to drink coffee or anything else along those lines, it's really important to make sure you're getting plenty of water. And additionally, one of the things, I do moderate my coffee intake, because even though it's may certainly have fewer calories than soda, it also can be a bit acidic. So if somebody does need a caffeine kick and whatever else, green tea is certainly an okay option for that, for, you know, that morning cup, what have you. But I would say caffeine is less necessary when somebody's getting proper nutrient. If they're taking like a B complex and some basic multivitamins and things of that nature, getting plenty of water, getting plenty of rest. Because there is a limit to how much caffeine is really good for you. You know, cause especially if somebody has high blood pressure, I would seriously recommend they stay away from multiple energy drinks throughout the day, that sort of thing.
So, right, you mentioned vitamins, so like B12 or complex.
Yeah.
I know there's a liquid B total that's 1, 2, 3, 6, and 12, something like that, that you could supplement and give yourself energy and really be giving your body something it needs. You're right, and then there's less of a need for that caffeine.
As far as soft drinks, too, the other thing that I you made me think of it as you're talking about it is a lot of people, they stop drinking sugary sodas and they start substituting with diet sodas. And, you know, that might be an okay option. And certainly if somebody with diabetes wants a soda, that's kind of really their only option there. But one of the things that that has a tendency to happen is people start drinking diet sodas to the exclusion of drinking regular water. And sodas do not help you deal with dehydration. In fact, they actually make it so that you need more water. So that's something to be aware. And also the fact that most diet sodas actually have a significant higher caffeine level than their sugary counterparts.
Well, that and some of them contain a substance that actually induces bloating, right? So you drink this diet drink and you think, well, you're losing weight, but yet maybe you're bloating or something. So again, it's looking for some juices or tea or just really more water. If you're going to, not realistic to say give up caffeine, but, just drink more water.
If you're not a fan of drinking water, like just plain water, another good option is the Sobe Life waters. They're natural and they don't have any, at least I don't think they do have any caffeine in them. And they're flavored waters. Another good option is Powerade or Powerade Zero or Gatorade or I drink G2 because it has less calories in it. And that's a really good option as far as getting back your electrolytes, especially if you're running and you're sweating and losing a lot of the fluid. You want to refill your system with electrolytes.
Very good point. What about on the food side?
For running, protein. At least for me. Go ahead.
I was going to agree with Hope. Protein is particularly important because if you're not getting enough protein, you're actually going to have muscle loss. And the more muscle mass that you have, the more calories you will burn at rest. If you're not getting enough protein, you're not going to have the right weight loss.
So let's talk about where to get that protein, because a lot of people go, oh, meat. Oh, I can eat all the meat you want. So maybe that's not quite the way you want to approach it. So talk about where you get those protein sources.
Hope, do you want to speak to that? Because actually it sounds like you have a little bit more expertise in that area.
I don't know about that, but okay. I usually have protein shakes. I have a marathon bars, which are protein bars. They're 210 calories, and they're, 6 to 12 grams of protein. So if you combine that with a protein shake, you're going to be good for protein each day. And eggs are really good. Egg whites.
Eggs are fantastic.
Yes.
Great source of protein.
I've hard-boiled the eggs. I'm not a real big fan, but I hard boil the eggs and I take the yolks out, throw the yolks away, and eat the egg whites. And they're really, really good for protein. I think they're, I don't know how many grams they are.
But. I think they're about, I don't know about egg whites, but I know that calorie count, I think an egg is about 70 calories, give or take.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you always hear about skinless chicken breast or something like that. Is that good on the meat?
Absolutely.
Side?
Yeah, you're certainly going to get a lot less fat. And again, it's occasionally having something that has that extra skin on it, it's actually can be good for the psychology so that you're not limiting yourself all the time. But in general, you're going to if you can get minimize the fat and actually have that protein from a less fatty source. So say for instance, if you take that boneless skinless chicken breast and you put it on something like a Foreman grill. Great resource there because for draining off the fat, that's going to be a lot healthier than if you're having a BLT, because the protein to fat content is going to be a lot more closer to what you're wanting.
And you mentioned vitamins. Do you have a particular vitamin supplement or something that you recommend that you use on a regular basis?
I use a basic time released vitamin that I get at the vitamin shop, and I think GNC has similar, and some of the other stores there. The biggest thing to be aware of when it comes to vitamins is that if they don't dissolve, if you were to leave a vitamin in water. And you come back after 24 hours and it really hasn't dissolved much, it's not going to dissolve enough in your body for you to absorb it. And so some of the cheaper vitamins, you're going to get what you pay for. So that's to be aware of getting the vitamins that are actually of a decent enough quality that they'll break down enough that you can actually absorb them. So say your Walmart vitamins, your one a day, generally speaking, you're just going to go right through you. You're not going to get any of the nutrients out of them, unfortunately.
Well, and they have different terms. I've heard like sublingual or whatever. So there's some that you actually have to chew or some that you actually put under your tongue, liquid type, or what is that sublingual? What does that mean?
That means you hold it under your tongue and it kind of absorbs there. And the sublingual ones, that's you're not going to have to worry about whether it's going to absorb. That's fine. And the chewable ones are certainly going to absorb. It's the ones that you swallow. They can definitely absorb. All the vitamins that I take actually are ones that I swallow. But those are the ones where you need to kind of look at, if you buy the real cheap ones that you just swallow, those are the ones more likely to not break down enough for your body to absorb the nutrients from them.
Okay, well, that's very good points made tonight. I guess we're doing good. We haven't had any questions yet, so we must be answering them for them. So we're down to our final 3 or 4 minutes. So see if any final comments or anything that I haven't addressed that the two of you would like to mention. I'll start with you, Hope, I guess.
Not that I know of.
Okay. Anything from you, Joshua?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to fitness, again, we touched upon this in the beginning of the program, but again, it's start with something. Even if all you can do is maybe you do 5 push-ups every day and you go for a quarter mile walk every day, or whatever it is that's beyond, something more than what you're doing, and you kind of consistently go to that. And also too, if you have friends or family that are at least, fitness oriented or not, communicating with them your goals and wanting to become healthier. And, you may have people that are less supportive than others, because maybe they feel guilty about their own level of fitness or physique that they might have. But one of the things that blind people, is really helpful for us to do is find people who are allies in something that we want to accomplish. And so reaching out and communicating our goals and what we're trying to accomplish, that's one of the ways that I found some help in terms of coming up with nutritional help. I had a friend of mine, she used to work at Jenny Craig, and she had done nutritional counseling and things like that. She helped me quite a bit in terms of being aware of what I was eating. So whether it just be both starting out small and something that's consistent, but also reaching out to people that may be able to be a good resource. Just doing it alone sometimes may not be as effective.
Very good. A lot of great suggestions there. I want to thank both of you, Joshua Loya and Hope Paulos, for joining us this evening. We can continue the discussion in the Cerotech Tech Room over at SAMNet. For those who want to go into the discussion further, certainly welcome to do that. We invite you to join us. We have some great tech chats coming up. We're going to do a special one on Saturday the 29th where we're going to do some highlights from ATIA. That gives me time to get back and funnel through all of it. So we'll be doing that. And again, I want to thank Joshua especially for actually contacting me and making the suggestion to do this presentation. We really want to hear from you folks. Resources at cerotalk.com. If you have a tech chat you want us to cover, please let us know. Or if you have an area of expertise that not just everyone is into, share your knowledge and your passion. You got the world at large to listen and learn. And, you're not going to reach everyone. Not everyone's going to care. But those who do are going to take it very seriously. And, you're going to make a little difference in the world in which we live. So, again, I thank both of you. And we invite you to join us next week as we do Tech Chat 86. And, of course, a podcast coming up on the 17th with a whole lot of tech news and some product reviews and all that cool stuff. So until we meet again next week, I encourage all of you to stay connected and stay directed. This concludes another Cerotalk Tech Chat, powered by Accessible Event, a product of Cerotech Corporation, giving the blind, deaf, and deafblind full access to classes, meetings, and webinars using Microsoft Word documents, Excel spreadsheets, PowerPoint slides, and web pages. 508 compliance is just one click away at www.accessibleevent.com. Until we meet again, stay connected and stay directed.